Welcome to A Slab of Glass. I'm Jeff Perry. Each episode, I'm joined by my co-host, Christopher Lawley, as we discuss iOS and iPad productivity.
Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
Really well, Chris. How's the moving been for you?
I'm so glad to be done. This is the second time I've had to move just this year alone, and I'm so glad to be done. I'm not moving for a while, and I'm really excited just to be back at work.
There you go.
This week, we're going to be talking about apps we use, specifically apps we use for work and kind of throughout the day to get kind of our stuff done and kind of really, what we use to focus on our work. I think this is kind of an interesting category. I think this is kind of something that's very different for everybody because everybody does work a little differently. I do a lot of video stuff and I edit this podcast. You also edit podcasts, but you do a lot of writing. So everybody's kind of a little different. So we just kind of wanted to talk about apps we use to kind of organize our work and kind of what we use throughout the day, really.
And I think that it would also be interesting to sort of see how we handle things differently as far as like the apps that we use and things that we use with it and everything else. So I think that would be one way to really find some cool things going on with it.
Absolutely.
You know what? Let me start off with one of the newer apps that I've been using every day that is just kind of a lifesaver when it comes to everything, really. I've been using Drafts 5, and we talked about it a little bit last episode and things that we liked with it and everything like that, but it's becoming my bread and butter, Chris. Like, I can't think of another app that handles inputs as, if I have an idea or something I need to remember for later or, anything really that is just important that I need to get out of my head immediately. Drafts 5 handles it great, and I can't find a script or an app or something that won't allow me to move it over to those things because it has support for everything, and the directory that Drafts 5 has is just fantastic. Everything that I have to write down in text usually goes into Drafts 5 first now.
That's interesting. Yeah, Drafts 5 has been one of those really, really interesting apps that you could just do so much with it. It's unbelievable how much you can do with it. But for me, at least, I've been moving, so I haven't really had too much time to play with it since it's come out. I know there's so much I could do with it, and I know there's a lot it could actually help me with. I just, I sat down, I did my review with it over the beta period, but I haven't had time to make it work for my work yet. So I'm excited to kind of dig into that app a little bit more.
Yeah, I think if you were to do that and then really try and play around with what the Drafts app can kind of offer and like either like search for the apps that you use all the time or just play around with the directories and stuff like that. I have a couple of links to some really good lists of apps and directories and actions that like people have put together in like a huge list. Matt Birchler from Birchtree.me is a really good example. He's put a huge list together of things that you can do with Drafts 5 that I found very handy. So I'll put that in the show notes and everything else and have that for you. I think Drafts 5 is worth playing around with for an afternoon. I think it's that powerful. So what about you? What's one app that you're using every day that's helping you out?
For me, Todoist is my bread and butter. It's where everything, all of my tasks go in. So whether it's for my day job, for my personal life, for video stuff, or for this podcast, any task goes in there. I've tried probably every task manager out on the App Store right now. If you just pull up the App Store on my phone and type in to do or task manager or whatever, it's going to all have that downloaded icon or that purchased icon already because I've tried them all. And what I like about Todoist as opposed to all the other ones is all the hooks for automation you can do. So I can use my Amazon Echo to kind of be able to add stuff to my grocery list or my task list. I can use Workflow to like build a bunch of different tasks that go into Todoist. So like every time I start a new video project, I have a basically a list of every step that I have to go through from starting the outline to publishing the video. Every task goes in there, and that's something that's actually really handy to have. Todoist just works for me. It works with my brain. Mm-hmm. I've tried a lot of other task managers, like I said. I've tried OmniFocus, and OmniFocus just seems like too much for me. Todoist seems like this kind of perfect balance between having just enough features like natural language input versus like having so many features, like having to do like weekly reviews and all sorts of like weird category stuff. I can just put my task in there. I can assign a date. I can put a label on it, which is kind of nice. So I can kind of break everything up, whether it's personal, day job, you know, video related, whatever. And it just works a little bit better for me. I don't want something that's so overwhelming that has a bajillion features in it. For a while, I was using the task manager To-Do, and that's the number two in D-O.
Yeah.
And it's so overwhelming. There's just so... I think I counted at one point, and it was like 8 or 10 steps or something just to add a new task to like the level that I wanted. And what's great about Todoist is you open it up, you hit the plus button, you just type in, you know, work on video tomorrow at 7 p.m. And there you go. It's in there. I even have a workflow, and I'm going to talk about workflow a little later. I have a workflow that I can just hit launch from the today widget, and it'll just ask me what I want to do. I can just type it in, and it'll add it right to Todoist. That way, I don't have to see what's in my task manager. I don't know why, but I get this feeling of being overwhelmed a lot, and it's something that I've always kind of struggled with. So whenever I open up my task manager and there's a ton of stuff in there, and I get that overwhelming feeling, it's just not good. So when I want to just add something really quickly, I don't want to have to see what else is in there. It's really handy just to be able to, you know, hit that today widget button, type in what I want. So, you know, go grocery shopping tomorrow at 2 p.m. and then assign it to the personal category. It just works really well for me, and that's just something that I really like. Todoist is subscription based, and it's kind of really interesting. We talked last episode about subscription apps and stuff like that, and how, you know, that's kind of probably the future of iOS apps and different things there, just because it kind of keeps supporting developers and stuff like that. And this is one subscription. I think that I'm actually going on my second year for the subscription now. It just renewed in February. So it's definitely something that's stuck with me. It's definitely the task manager I've used the longest. Usually a task manager lasts like a month or two for me. And the fact that this one's lasting, you know, over a year now is fantastic.
I've been a subscriber for Todoist for, I think, 3 or 4 years consecutively. I don't use the app, but every once in a while I want to go and use it. And I know I'm going to want the pro features, so I just pay the $25 and just pay for the full year. So I'm subscribed until March of 2019 currently.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I've been a subscriber from theirs for years. I've been using their app off and on for a while. It used to be my main task manager of choice, and then I started playing around with Things 3 and going back to OmniFocus, and most recently, Chris, I've been using OmniFocus 3 as my current task manager.
Interesting.
I've been fortunate enough to be on the beta, and I'm also reading the book Getting Things Done by David Allen, which is the kind of methodology of task management that OmniFocus is kind of built around.
Mm.
If you don't know what Getting Things Done, you can do a quick Google search and you'll find out plenty about it. But yeah, I've been reading David Allen's Getting Things Done again. I've never been able to finish it. I think this is my third time trying to read it. For whatever reason, I always have to put it down about halfway through. I'm going to try and push myself and finish it this time around, because I think it's going to be very valuable. And I think I'm in the right mindset finally to kind of absorb this information and not have to be cynical and skeptic as I usually am with this kind of stuff. So, and the thing I really like about OmniFocus 3 is it's the only app, I should say OmniFocus and OmniFocus 2 both do this. Like OmniFocus in general does this, where you can hide tasks that you can't do anything about currently. Like I just haven't found an app that allows me to do that very easily. You know, they just have this thing called defer dates, where it's like, I can't do anything about this task until this date and this time. So it'll hide it from you, and it'll still be in the task manager, and you could find it if you really look for it, or you change the main settings of like how you see tasks. But like, that's it, really. I mean, you can have everything like hidden. Like if I have to go and buy a Mother's Day gift, but I'm not going to do that till next weekend, I will defer it until, you know, that Friday afternoon. It'll be like, hey, you can go buy your mom her Mother's Day gift and everything else, you know. Like it just works out really well for me to be able to handle that kind of task management, where everything in my head goes out, but the stuff that really matters and the stuff that's actionable at this point in time is the only stuff that I see. And that's what I like about OmniFocus, and that's why I always seem to be coming back to it, is that it just handles that kind of thing really well. And I feel like that's how my brain works, of like, I need to put everything out there, but let me only see the things I can really do anything about right now.
Interesting. I'm excited to try the OmniFocus 3 when it comes out. I believe it's coming out later this month at the time of recording. So
yeah, May 30th is the date in which it's coming out for iOS. I think it's coming out for Mac later.
Gotcha.
So yeah, I'll have a link to the blog post from Omni Group about the details and pricing and everything else that they elaborate on as well in the show notes.
Yeah, I'm excited to try it, but OmniFocus has never really been my cup of tea. So we'll see. We'll see if it does kind of go for it.
Okay. What about you, Chris? What's another app that you're using every day that is just helping you get things done from point A to point B?
Probably the biggest app on my iPad outside of probably LumaFusion and Todoist would be Workflow. Workflow has been absolutely essential. And I've actually kind of noticed something. Ever since iOS 11 came out with drag and drop, I haven't had to rely on Workflow as much, which I think is fantastic. I was using Workflow to substitute things that should be built into the system, like moving multiple files around and stuff like that. But since drag and drop came out, I haven't needed that as much. But, and this is a big but, there are still things you can't do in the system that Workflow will allow. So manipulating zip files, or building, you know, consecutive tasks in your task manager, or every time I publish a video or we publish a podcast, I have a workflow that runs through that'll basically tweet it out and promote it and put it on my website and things like that. There are a lot of things Workflow could do that nothing else can do. And it's just one of those apps I rely on every single day to get my stuff done. I probably could work off the iPad without Workflow, but it would be a pain. And it would be so much of a pain that I don't think I would want to do it. So I think Workflow is one of those apps that you really need to rely on. And when you first download Workflow, it can look scary. It can look overwhelming, but it's not. Mm-hmm. If you know, if you've ever written code, you're going to be right at home in Workflow. It's basically, it's like block-based code. Like it's really simple, and it's really easy to use. If you've never written code before, there's great tutorials out on the internet. Jeff has a few posts on his website. I've done a couple of videos. There's a lot of other places too that has stuff, but I just recommend going to the gallery and downloading a bunch of already pre-built workflows and stuff, and just manipulate those, change those to make them something that you want to use. And I guess I should even back up, because I didn't really explain what Workflow is, but I've talked about it so much, I just kind of imagine everybody knows. But Workflow is basically an automation tool. Basically, build a bunch of actions together, you put the actions together, you run them together. So I kind of already mentioned, every time I do a new video, I have a list of things that get added to Todoist. Basically, what that does is it takes a directory of different things. So it'll be like, write the outline, write the script, you know, record the VO, record the B-roll, things like that. And it'll put them all into Todoist in a project. And it kind of runs through that. So it's a really interesting app. If you haven't downloaded it, it's free to download. It's actually owned by Apple now. We're kind of hoping to see if that kind of gets pushed into iOS a little more natively now. But everyone should download it. Just give it a shot. And if you're already using it, push yourself further. Just kind of keep thinking about tasks you do every day or once a week or every other day or whatever. Something that you do repetitively. See if you can build a workflow for it, because I guarantee you, you will be surprised. And a lot of the stuff that you think you can't probably can be done in Workflow.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that if Workflow wasn't around for the iOS devices, especially the iPad, you could still use your iPad as a computer or your main device, but who would want to? You know, it's just not—it's not necessarily the best thing. I think we should talk more about Workflow and Apple's acquisition of it at the end of the podcast. I know we're like a year or so late with this kind of conversation, but I have some idea. I have a question I want to ask you that we'll talk about the after show. But like with Workflow, it has been a very, very nice thing to have when you're working with your devices. Like, for instance, I use an app called Pretext now for writing my blog posts. I recently switched from, I switched from WordPress to Squarespace, and then from Squarespace to blot.im. And it's basically I should stop switching services, and I'm going to, but B, I have moved over to Blot.im because it's very, very simple. It basically runs off of text files in a specific folder in your Dropbox account. And anything that you make changes to in that text file will automatically populate onto the website. And any new posts or pages that you put on there will automatically populate and post onto the website as well. It's super handy, very simple, and very easy to work with. But I will say it doesn't work with Ulysses as much as I would like, primarily because Ulysses was my publishing tool of choice, where I would just write what I wanted with Ulysses and then upload it to the WordPress directory for my website at the time. When I moved to Squarespace, I knew that that wasn't going to happen. And then when I moved from Squarespace to Blot.im, that never changed. Like, I just can't publish directly from Ulysses into Blot.im. I could export it as a markdown file and then put it into the Dropbox folder, but I would rather do something that would be a little bit more simpler and not necessarily as difficult with Ulysses when it comes to like adding different things. Because the way that Blot works, Chris, is that it can take markdown syntax, HTML syntax, JavaScript syntax, all in the same text file, and it will parse it out and write it out in the correct code. Like, it basically just reads of like, A, it defines what the code is, and then it reads what the code does, and then it will write out the correct code for the format in which that Blot.im works with. So it's very, very interesting and very handy, especially when I write a lot of stuff in Markdown and then I want to add an iframe embed for like a podcast episode that I'm writing about, or a video or something like that. It works really well. And I can just, you know, especially with videos, you can just do the URL like you can with WordPress, and the same thing with like Twitter posts and stuff. Just put the URL in a single line and it'll automatically create a embeddable image or tweet or video or whatever that you want to put on it. So that's super handy and super interesting to kind of do. But with all of that added features and stuff like that, when it comes to like editing text files, I needed an app that would be more inclined to work with it. And Pretext just seemed to be the one that worked really well for it. Which is a text editing app that has both HTML syntax highlighting and markdown syntax highlighting. And you can export it as a .txt file without any problem, you know, and you can save it right in the Files app. It's integrated with the Files app on iOS really well. So I can just create a draft in my drafts folder and move it over to the posts when it's done being edited and everything else. But I started talking about this with workflow. So I'm kind of all over the place. So forgive me, Chris, but like, I am talking about workflow when it comes to Blot, because with images, you just have to upload the images with an underscore as the first character of the file. Otherwise, it'll just post it right to your blog as like an image post, you know, like with WordPress. So I have to take the photos I take with my iPad or my iPhone, change the file name of them, and then upload them to a specific folder with that new name. And I wanted to go in even a little bit further and add the file name to the syntax I would need to add the photo into the post that I'm writing about. So effectively, I wanted to start writing the post and be like, hey, I want this image to go in here. Okay, cool. Let me just run a workflow that will take the image I want, rename the file, change the format from the new format that iPhones and iOS devices use. I think it's like .ehic or something like that, and create it as a JPEG, change the file name, upload it to the right folder, take that name and add it to the syntax. Oh yeah, and I want to copy that to my clipboard. So all I do is tap, okay, now it's in my clipboard, and I just paste the syntax and stuff into the file that I'm working with. It's super handy and very, very powerful. And it's one of the reasons why Workflow will continue to be one of the apps that I use every single day.
Yeah, that's really interesting, especially what you were talking about, how you kind of just redid your site and all that stuff. You were showing me that before we were recording all that, and I was kind of looking at it, and I think it's really interesting, especially the idea that it's all just hosted from Dropbox. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm just worried, you know, I'm not worried, but if Dropbox were to go away tomorrow, there's no backups currently.
Dropbox isn't going away.
No, I know. But like, my point is that I'm still piggybacking off of somebody else's services.
Yeah.
You know? Like, but then again, I, you know, my feeling was that I was doing the same thing with the hosting that I was doing with WordPress, or, you know, like I had a hosting website, and, you know, maybe they'll go away tomorrow or something. So I'm not too worried about it. It's just the one thing I do regularly, and I've been doing this before I even did this with my website, is that I always keep a physical backup of all of my Dropbox files on a hard drive.
Yep.
So,
yep.
But, you know, it's a side thing. Do you want to tell me something about you, like, Chris?
Yeah. So the next app that I want to talk about is Yoink. Yoink is, we talked about this last episode too, so I'm going to be brief on this one. Yoink is a shelf app. So basically it is a temporary storage application. It is not meant for long-term storage, but it's great when I'm working on projects and stuff and I'm having to move stuff back and forth. It is a fantastic app to have. It works great with drag and drop. So what I use a lot for it is when I'm working on a new video or something like that, and I have either images or video files or audio files and stuff that I need to move between different applications, whether I'm editing them in LumaFusion and I'm, you know, grabbing them on off of an SD card or whatever, I throw them into Yoink, and it makes it easy that I can just leave them there until I'm ready for them. I don't have to worry about what I'm doing with them. So I think shelf apps are really interesting. We talked a lot about shelf apps last week, so I'm not going to get too much into it and basically how they work and stuff like that, because I don't want to be repetitive. I definitely recommend people check out either Yoink, or another one is Glattis. Those are both very good apps. They work just slightly different, so if you don't like one, the other one will probably be a little more your speed.
Yeah, shelf apps, we mentioned it last episode, where shelf apps really helps you learn the power of drag and drop. And, you know, just the kind of things that an iPad can kind of do with drag and drop, and iOS 11 in general with the new features. So yeah, Shelf App is worthwhile to check out. You know, they're relatively inexpensive, so I think it's worth the money just to buy one and see how they work. There's a couple of other free Shelf Apps out there that you can try out if you don't really want to spend the money. But I think Glattis and Yoink are the only two Shelf Apps that I would recommend that you use, because of just how powerful they can be. And if you're going to use a Shelf App, might as well learn the one that you're going to want to use regularly, instead of using one and like, okay, does this do this, or does it do things differently? Just bite the bullet and just get one that's that costs a little bit, and just use that.
Yep, absolutely agree.
How do you get your news? Do you use RSS feed readers, or like, do you mainly get stuff from Twitter? Like,
I used to be a huge RSS person. I was crazy about RSS. But then it got to the point where I was like, why am I using this and Twitter? Twitter was a place where I was getting a lot of news. I could follow a couple of blogs there and I would still get everything. So I just kind of consolidated everything into Twitter probably 3, maybe 4 years ago. And that's worked great for me. Now, I have been thinking about doing RSS again, but to be honest, Twitter works fine for me. I think what would probably make me go back to RSS is if Twitter does end up killing third-party Twitter applications, which is a whole different discussion we don't need to have today. If third-party Twitter applications like Tweetbot and stuff went away or got deprecated to the point like you can't use them, I would probably go back to RSS then. So why do you ask that? I take it you're using an RSS app?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to know what your philosophy with RSS readers was, because I've been following more and more indie bloggers, just because that's kind of what I'm doing now with Tablet Habit, and I wanted to sort of be part of a community and see what everybody else is writing about, and not necessarily as like a competition thing, but more as like a camaraderie thing. And I wanted to be able to do that quickly and effectively and not have to worry about the mobile friendliness of some of the sites and stuff like that. So I've decided to use RSS more. And I think RSS is becoming more and more popular when it comes to getting your information now, because like you said, there are some hiccups and things that are going on with Twitter in the back end that make me worried. So I didn't want to use Twitter as my main source of news. Also because it kind of gives the advantage to the squeakiest wheel that gets the grease, you know? Like, people can continually post links of their latest post, or kind of bombard a lot of people and stuff like that when they're talking about posts that they've just recently created. And if I see it 4 or 5 times on my timeline, I'm probably going to click it just because I've been seeing it so much. But I think that kind of allows some of the better posts that aren't getting as much attention to fall through the cracks. And I don't really want that. I want to be able to find everything that I'm interested in and the people that I like to read from. And the ability to have that is with an RSS reader. So, I mean, I've been using RSS readers for a little while now, but I've been using the app Fiery Feeds for the majority of the time. Like, Fiery Feeds is my RSS reader of choice right now, just because of how nice it looks, the power that you can have behind it, the actions that are integrated with it. It's just a very nice app and all. A couple of things that I really like about Fiery Feeds is that you can change the themes pretty easily. It has a couple of premium features and stuff like that, one of which is like a quick action. So if I want to take an article and save it to my Instapaper, all I have to do is just do a long swipe from right to left, and it will automatically add it to my Instapaper for later reading. And that's super handy when it's more of a long form article that I don't want to lose, but I don't have time to read right now. I could just save it as is. And I find that is more acceptable for me, and more less friction for me than trying to like save it in my RSS reader app with like a, you know, you could star an app and it would stay in your favorites. But I just don't feel inclined to do that. So I send it to Instapaper and everything else. So I think RSS is something that people should look into one more time and just sort of see if it's working for you or if it could work for you. Because I think that it's kind of a renaissance of like not allowing other apps and third-party services to sort of dictate what you see, especially with new algorithmic timelines and things like that. You can use an RSS reader and get, you know, live updates on stuff and when things were posted at what time, and just have like a clean timeline, if you will. So RSS is something that I've been really, really interested in and wanting more people to get involved with. So if you haven't already, I would play around with it. You know, that's just my food for thought this episode, Chris.
The way you use Instapaper is very similar to me. I use Twitter, so I'll scroll through things. And then if I see something interesting, but I just don't have time to read it, I save it to Instapaper. And usually what'll happen is in the morning, I usually get up a little bit earlier than what I need to. And I kind of sit down and I kind of go through like articles and read up on some stuff and kind of just, you know, figure out what I missed and what was interesting on the internet in the, you know, last couple of days or so. With this last week with moving, my Instapaper is a mess. I have so much stuff in it right now that I need to go through, but that's neither here nor there. So the next app I kind of wanted to talk about is local storage. And I think this is another one we talked about last episode as well, so I won't get too detailed into it. But local storage is an app that basically allows you to take advantage of the local storage on your iPad by creating a folder in the On My iPad section of files. And I think this is really handy to have, especially if you have an iPad with a large amount of storage like myself. I keep all the videos and stuff that I'm working on in here, so that way I'm not having to worry about them syncing up to the cloud, eating up all my cloud storage data. It just makes a lot of sense. The great thing too is it's also a free app, so you could just download it, try it out. If you don't like it, no harm done. It's really interesting. I think we'll put a link to the video I did on it in the description in the show notes, because it's kind of hard to explain, but it just creates that folder. You save your stuff in it. You can use drag and drop. You can use the share sheet, whatever you want, but it just takes up local storage. And that's something that really needs to be built into the Files app. Hopefully that's something we get here pretty soon. But I think this is, in the meantime, this is a really good solution.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I think local storage is a gem that you found that is something that I've been using more and more when I'm using files and stuff like that, Chris. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate the heads up on that app and the recommendation, because it's helped me. I can tell you that right now.
That's awesome.
So real quick, I think I only have a couple left. I've been using Tweetbot and Twitterific as my Twitter apps of choice. By far, they're the two best Twitter apps on iOS that offer the best experience when it comes to Twitter. And, you know, zero ads. It is a completely non-algorithmic timeline. They're both kind of in jeopardy at this point with Twitter's changes to the API. You can find more about that in appsofafeather.com. I think there's a link in the description, but those two are my Twitter clients that I go back and forth on a lot. I'm currently using Twitterific just because it has more keyboard shortcuts, and I find that the unified timeline works better on that one than it does with Tweetbot. And obviously my last one is just Apple Mail. It's the best email client that I can use with all of my email apps that I've tried, and I've got a number of different emails that are of different services. Like, one's an Exchange email from my day job, Gmail for this podcast, a couple of other ones that are more IMAP heavy. It's just really hard to find an email app that can handle all of that stuff and be stable. And Mail.app is the only one that I can find that does that. So those are the ones that I use on a day-to-day basis, Chris. I kind of wanted to talk more about some of the ones that you don't use every day, but the ones that are well worth the time and attention that you give them when you need them. So are there any apps that kind of do that for you?
Yeah, so for me, I have a few apps that are like my must-have apps for video and podcast stuff. So I do all my writing in Bear, outline scripts, everything now is just pretty much 100% in Bear. It's a beautiful application, has great markdown support. I've talked about it a ton. It's a fantastic app. I bounce between Apple Notes and OneWriter and IA Writer and Ulysses and stuff like that, but I'm very happy with Bear. I'm very happy with the way it works and just the way everything kind of flows in that app.
Yeah, and they just had a new update. 1.5 now allows for archiving of notes.
Yes.
Which was something that was I desperately wanted from them, to where you can just sort of hide the notes that you don't really need to look at anymore. But if you want to find them later as like a reference file or something like that, it's there. And it's super handy and super powerful. And I couldn't be happier, because now, you know, all of the notes I had in there are archived because they're just not something that I'm going to access all the time. I only have like 4 or 5 notes that are on that list now that I can go and edit and add things to, because, you know, one of them is like books I need to read. The other one is, tablet habit ideas and podcast ideas and stuff like that. So that's kind of where my Bear app notes are now. So I'm happy with that one. It's always been my note taking app of choice, and doubly so now since you can archive stuff.
Yeah, that was a great update. You can also, I really like using tags in that app, and you can now put change the icon for the tag. So if it's something that doesn't match the default name for the tags and it doesn't auto update, you can go in and manually change it, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The next app that I want to talk about is Ferrite. Ferrite is what I use to not only record this podcast, the local end version on my side, but it's also what I use to edit the podcast as well. It's a great audio application. I don't just use it for podcasts. I also use it for my VO as well. So my voiceovers and all my videos get recorded in Ferrite and then edited in Ferrite before I move everything to LumaFusion.
Mm-hmm. And Ferrite is becoming my podcast editor of choice. I have been using an app called Hindenburg on my MacBook Air for a while now. I still use it for a lot of my freelance editing stuff, just because that's just a workflow that has been proven to be easily the fastest way to me to edit those podcasts effectively. But with Ferrite, I can edit this podcast and my other podcast getting caught up, and I can take my time with it a little bit. And it feels more enjoyable to edit with this podcast on Ferrite than it does to edit with it on a Mac. So Ferrite, I've been using more and more when it comes to editing podcasts and audio and stuff like that. And it's so powerful, Chris, that like you never really realize what it can do until you start playing around with it and be like, oh, can I do this? Oh, yeah, no, it's totally easy. I can make that happen with no problem. It's just a very intuitive app, and the developers over at WoojiJuice that make it are just fantastic.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's a terrific application. The biggest app that I use every single day is LumaFusion. It's a multi-track video editor, and it's a great application. It's something that I looked for on the iPad for a really long time, and it just makes so much sense. It's where I edit all of my videos. It has great features like color correction and effects. It even has royalty-free music built into the app that you can use. I highly recommend it if anybody wants to do any sort of video editing on their iPad. It's definitely the best video editing application out there on iOS. There's just so much you can do with it. Ever since I've started using it, I haven't needed to go back to Premiere Pro or Final Cut Pro. Now, there are stuff Final Cut Pro and Premiere Pro does that LumaFusion does not, but for my workflow and what I do and the video stuff that I do, I don't need those apps anymore. I edit everything 100% off my iPad on LumaFusion, and it's a terrific workflow for me. It works really well. They recently added the ability to do chroma key, so green screen stuff that's in there. There's so many like built-in features that you wouldn't think would be possible on an iPad, and they do it, and there isn't any other app that at least I know of on the App Store that does everything that LumaFusion does. It's fantastic.
I don't think I've ever heard you talk about LumaFusion, Chris. This is the first I've heard about it.
Yeah, I might over talk about that app, but you know what? I really do want to see it succeed. I really do want it to flourish on the App Store. Apple still hasn't brought Final Cut Pro to the iPad, and Adobe, I don't even know what Adobe's doing with Premiere for the iPad.
To be fair, nobody knows what Adobe's doing for the Mac either.
Yeah, that's true. But the developers at LumaFusion, they took a chance and they made a really powerful application. I cannot think of an app that probably is more powerful than LumaFusion. It's a terrific app, and I thoroughly enjoy using it every single time I get to. They put a lot of hard work into it, and it definitely shows.
Yeah, no, for sure. I couldn't agree more. It's obviously one of those apps that just are very powerful and worthwhile. And, you know, if you have the money, you should do it. I see some development stuff here too, Chris. I mean, you do work in IT, so I'm sure that coding does come into play at times. Or, you know, is this more for fun? I mean, talk a little bit about what you do with coding on your iPad and kind of the apps that you use with it.
So I'm working on a project, and I'm not going to say what the project is, but it's development related, and I'm using an app called Coda for that. Coda is a terrific kind of code IDE editor. It's great for all sorts of stuff. It has support for all sorts of different languages, and if you work on a server or something, it works really well, integrates really well with it. That's what I use to write a majority of my code, but I also write scripts. And when I say scripts, I don't mean like video scripts. I mean,
like Apple scripts or something like that.
Apple scripts. I do work in IT, so I do some Windows stuff as well. I know he admits to using Windows. It's not something I use often, and it's not something I like to use, but I do, have a Windows environment I have to support. So I've been using an app called Textor. And Textor is a plain text editor that hooks straight into the Files app. It's terrific. Mm-hmm. It's a lot like TextEdit or Notepad, or Notepad++, if you know what any of those applications are. It's very similar to that. It's just a plain text editor, hooks right into the Files application, so I can sync things with Dropbox or iCloud. I write some PowerShell scripts and a few other kinds of things in there as well, so it works really well with that.
Yeah, Textor was an app that I was using when I was writing with Blot until I found Pretext. I still use Textor from time to time, especially when the code that I put in, especially like HTML code, there's some formatting issues that you have to do with Blot that I use Textor for to make sure everything's working well with it. And when I need it, it works really, really well. I think I forget the developer's name off the top of my head, but whoever is working on that app is great. They also have like a console, like a terminal kind of app too.
It's called
same person.
OpenTerm, and it's getting a really big update that I'm very excited for. I don't use it too much right now. There's not a whole lot in the app that I can use it for, but they are talking about bringing scripting to the application. So that means that I would definitely be using it a heck of a lot more. So you can, have pre-built scripts and just run them, which will be nice. I also heard them mention something about bringing some networking features over, and that's kind of more along the lines of what I do for my day job is a lot of networking stuff. So I would be really excited to see those kind of features come to OpenTerm as well. It's a great application already. I don't have too much of a use for it right now because a lot of stuff that I do in Terminal, it can't quite support it just yet, or it doesn't support it just yet, but does sound like it's getting some big updates here pretty soon. So I am excited to try those out.
Terminal is something that I've always wanted to kind of grasp a little bit better. I felt like I really never needed it since I moved over to iOS, but some of the things I've seen that you do and other people have been doing with OpenTerm makes me kind of rethink that.
Yeah.
So maybe after this big update, I'll take a dive in and see what I can kind of get from it.
Yeah, I definitely recommend everybody check out Terminal, whether it's on a Mac or if you have a Windows computer. I definitely recommend don't even go to command prompt, go straight to PowerShell. There's a lot of really cool things you can do with those kinds of applications, and it doesn't take too much to learn. If you spend a couple hours Google search and just reading up on some stuff, there's a lot you can learn and there's a lot you can do with it.
While we're talking about some coding and text editing and stuff like that, there's one more app that I wanted to kind of bring up. And it's an app called Clean Text. I don't know if you've heard about this, Chris, or not.
Clean Text? I don't think so.
So basically what it will do is it can take HTML text or rich text or whatever, and all you do is you paste that text into this app, and it strips out all of the formatting and makes it plain text formatting only.
Okay.
And then you could take it elsewhere. So like if you're taking something from like a Google Doc or something, or wanting to put something into a Google Doc, because Google's rich text features kind of suck. I mean, it seems proprietary, and it just seems like it doesn't really work when it comes to like taking rich text from somewhere else and trying to put it in to Google Doc. That's a great example. Or if I want to take something from a site and I kind of want to strip it from the rich text formatting and put it into pretext without any issues, I use Clean Text for that as well. So it can be really handy to kind of strip away all of the added stuff that rich text has and just make it plain text, because with this move for me with Blot, text files and plain text has become one of my best friends, and I wanted to be able to handle that well enough with the apps that I write with, and Clean Text is just sort of one of those middleman apps that I use when I'm having trouble with it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I actually have a workflow that does something very similar, that I'll take either rich text and turn it into Markdown, or take Markdown and it'll turn it into a PDF, or it'll even take rich text and turn it into plain text. So that's really interesting that you have something that there's an application that does that. So I it's kind of shows that there are a bunch of different ways of doing things like that. You could go the workflow route, there's probably an application that'll do that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and looking at the settings, there's a bunch of other things that you can do with it as well, which is basically like you can convert HTML to plain text, you can have URL encoding, you can have symbols to descriptions, you can change the case of the text files, you can change the type of quotation marks it uses, you can replace spaces with returns or returns with spaces, change ellipses into three periods, you can trim the spaces, you can trim empty lines. Like, it's not just an app that removes text files, rich text formatting and stuff like that. You can pretty much get this to whatever format you want with just a couple of taps and allow you to do that. I think it would be worthwhile to take a look at it and give it a try. I think it's only like $1 on the App Store, if that, and it's worthwhile. So huh. I'll have a link to it in the description.
I'll have to check that out. The only other app that I kind of just want to throw in here at the last minute is Pixelmator. Pixelmator is what I use to make all the thumbnails for my videos. I've switched between that and Affinity Photo, but what I like about Pixelmator is how simple it is. So depending on what you do, you may prefer Affinity Photo. Affinity Photo is probably the best photo editor on the App Store, but I don't need that much. I want to be able to get in, make a few tweaks, put some text over it, and get out. Affinity Photo, there's too many options in there, and then I end up getting bogged down, and I just play with things for too long. Pixelmator, I could do a really good job of, making a thumbnail in probably about 10, 15 minutes and it being really good. I really like the way my latest thumbnails have been turning out, and that's all thanks to Pixelmator. So I think it's a really great application to check out if you're into, basic photo editing. And when I say basic, I don't mean just like, oh, brightness and contrast controls. Like, there are some really good stuff in here. If you want really, really advanced stuff, I'd go check out Affinity Photo.
I always recommend that if someone wants to get into photo editing, I always have them try out Pixelmator first. And if they can't do what they want or they want more, then I tell them to try Affinity Photo. But I always lead people to Pixelmator first, because Affinity Photo, while very powerful and very effective, it can be overwhelming for any newbies that are trying to just crop an image and add a couple of gradient backgrounds. Like, you can do that with Pixelmator, no problem. You don't need Affinity Photo for it. In fact, it would probably take you longer to do it in Affinity Photo, even if you knew how to use the app, than you would with Pixelmator, because Pixelmator just has a lot more real estate and a lot less clutter and a lot less super functionality, but it has a lot of high functioning stuff that you can do with it.
So you wanted to have a discussion about workflow. What was your question for me?
Your comment of, like, you want workflow to be more integrated into Apple in the next iOS updates and stuff like that?
Yep.
I don't know if I agree.
Really?
So the reason I say that leads to my question of, do you think workflow on its own would have more integration capabilities than if Apple were to take it and put it into their own system?
If Apple put it into their own system, I guarantee you at version one, there will be an API for third-party developers to hook into it. I absolutely guarantee it. They would not take that away. They know that's what makes workflow great. But if they took it and they put it into their own system, that means it doesn't have to follow apps for rules, which means you get system hooks. So you could automate things like, you know, turning Wi-Fi off, or, you know, being able to move things around in the Files app or delete things in the Files app. Because right now there's no integration with the Files app. There's save stuff to iCloud Drive. There's save stuff to Dropbox, but you can't move a large amount of files around. You can't rename files. You can't delete files. And that's something that I think would be really interesting to see. And the only way we would get that is if it is absolutely hooked into the system in iOS. Now, I don't think, and I could be wrong, and I'd very much be happy to be wrong. So Workflow was bought a little over a year ago by Apple from the Workflow team. And I don't think we're going to see what that comes out in iOS 12. That seems a little too soon, especially if we're getting kind of what I'm thinking we're getting. I think it's going to be an iOS 13 thing.
I think 12 is going to be more like a Snow Leopard kind of update, where it's going to clean things out. And I think we should probably talk more about this when WWDC gets closer. But, like, I think 13 is going to be the place where, like, a lot of big time changes and features come in, because iOS 7 was the big update with the new look and everything that's been going on for the last 6 years. So I think it's time for a new update to come in for the style and the design of it. It's not going to be as drastic from iOS 6 to iOS 7 as that was, but I think there's going to be some changes to with the design and the look and feel of everything, especially with new form factors coming out and everything like that. So I think that's inevitable. And I think with those big changes, they'll also offer some back-end changes as well. And that's maybe where workflow could shine in that new update. But, you know, it's so far out that it's hard to speculate even what exactly is going to happen with it. But that was mainly my main question of, like, is workflow better on its own or integrated with Apple? And I could kind of see your point with that, Chris, with it being integrated with Apple, you can do a lot more granular things with the system. I don't know if that would actually happen if Apple were to take it, because, you know, there are just some settings that they still haven't gotten right when it comes to, like, turning Wi-Fi or Bluetooth off. And now it disables it, but it doesn't necessarily turn it off. And that can get kind of weird. But, like, on top of that, I think if I recall correctly, when Workflow was acquired by Apple, they immediately sent out consent forms or something similar to that from Apple to all of these applications and services that are integrated into Workflow, to basically have them sign a waiver saying, yes, you can use my app within the Workflow app with no problem. Here's my consent with that kind of thing. And Google didn't sign it for a while. And there's some things that I think left when Apple bought Workflow. I think Google lost a lot of their actions and stuff like that within Workflow. And I think that, you know, I think the whole reason behind that was for legal purposes and for liability issues that Apple could potentially have later on. But I think it's just a clear example of the priorities that Apple could have with this kind of app. And I don't think that they would want to offer it even more capabilities inside the system-wide settings. I think it's more of an optional pro user feature that could be used. And I think that works best as an application outside of the iOS integration.
I truly believe that the iOS app itself is still in the App Store just because the new workflow 2.0 hasn't launched. It's not ready. And I think it's coming. I think it's going to be hooked into the system. I think it's going to be a lot like the Files app. And I think kind of what the future is going to hold for workflow, but we're going to see. Like I said, I don't think it's going to be this year. I think it'll be next year, because 1 year seems like a really fast time to completely rebuild something like that. Unless, and I could be wrong, but unless they're just like taking already the basics of workflow, the app as it is right now, and making a 2.0 version of that and just expanding upon that. But I imagine if there is a new version of workflow, it'll be built, it'll have system hooks, it'll be built into the system. You'll be able to do more things with it than just use X callback URLs. And I imagine there'll also be some sort of Swift component as well, which would be really awesome.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see the Swift component coming in really a lot too. I think that would be interesting to sort of see. But, you know, as I say a lot in this podcast, Chris, is that I hope that I'm wrong and that you're right.
I like that.
I mean, it would be nice to have all those things. It's just, I don't know if I see that happening. But, you know, I've been wrong before, and I hope that I'm wrong again, because most of the time when I'm right, it's not for good. It's usually because it didn't go the way that most people wanted. And I'm a cynic, and I always just think, yeah, no, nothing ever is going to go the way that you want. And so, like I said, I hope that I'm wrong and you're right.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening. We really appreciate it. I just want to take this time and say, you know, this is a new podcast. This is something Jeff and I really do care about. So if you guys have a minute, if you could go over to the iTunes app or the podcast app that is, and rate the show and kind of give us a little bit of a review, we'd really appreciate that. If you're using Overcast, if you can hit that star recommend button, that would be fantastic as well. You can find me on the internet. I'm on Twitter at Chris_Lolly. You can find all my stuff, podcast, video related stuff at theuntitledsite.com. Jeff, where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me over at Twitter at I am Jeff Perry, or over at tablethabit.com, and give the new site a look and see what you think of it, and let me know.
All right, Jeff, I think that's about it. Thank you so much for talking with me, and we'll talk to you guys all in a couple of weeks. Thanks.